Hi, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of So What Happens Next, where no man has gone before November. As always, I am one of your hosts, Thomas.
I'm Amber.
And I'm Walter.
And this week, we are diving into a real mixed bag, I think, here. This, we're calling it the Star Trek Failed Reboot Saga? So, how you guys doing today? Amber, how are you doing today?
Doing pretty good.
Doing good, all right. And joining us today, as I said at the top of the episode, is last time's guest, Walter. How are you doing today, man?
It is a great Saturday. There's nothing I enjoy more than a good trek, you know, across Star Trek. So, yeah, happy to be here.
Awesome. Well, thanks for coming back. A few technical issues got in the way, so previously we announced that my dad and Cody would be back for this episode. Neither of them were able to make it. Technical difficulties, and my dad
wasn't feeling. Yeah, they got stuck in the past.
Yeah, stuck in the past.
Or future. Future, I want to say.
Whatever it is. It's that temporal Cold War.
Yeah.
Jeez.
This is no time to argue about time. We don't have the time. What was I saying?
But the three of us are more than happy to jump in here and talk about some Trek. So, just for the context, a quick recap of what we've been doing is we have kind of named this month, and it's going to bleed into December for sure at this point, our No Man Has Gone Before November. We are diving into Star Trek kind of head first, the whole deal, everything that exists, because Amber here, up until we started this, hasn't really experienced Star Trek too much.
Just like, say I'm a loser.
I'm not saying anything. I will say nothing. But yeah, so Amber hasn't really experienced Star Trek up until now. So we were like, let's just, you know, grab roughly 10-ish episodes from each kind of generation, give them a watch. We pulled the episodes more or less from top 10 lists. And, you know, let Amber view these, decide whether she wants to continue watching these, each of these shows or not, and what's her opinion on Star Trek as a whole. For this week, we have Star Trek Enterprise and what we are calling the Kelvin timeline movies, the J.J. Abrams movies that came out around 2009 to, I believe, 2014 or so. Star Trek Enterprise, the episodes that we did are Broken Bow, which is the pilot, The Andorian Incident, Carbon Creek, Regeneration, First Flight, Similitude, E-Squared, the Borderland Cold Station 12 Augments kind of arc, Affliction and Divergence arc, In a Mirror Darkly, and unlike the other ones, we actually went ahead and did the finale, These Are the Voyages. And then obviously for the Kelvin timeline, we are watching Star Trek 2009, Star Trek Into Darkness, and Star Trek Beyond. So, straight out the gate, Amber, what's your opinion on, let's start with Star Trek Enterprise. What is your opinion on Star Trek Enterprise?
I actually like Star Trek Enterprise. I like it a lot better than the other ones that we've seen. So, I guess if I were to do like a ranking at this point, it would be Star Trek the original series, and then Star Trek Enterprise, and just kind of go from there.
Okay. Walter, what are your opinions on Star Trek Enterprise? Is this, I think you were saying at the top of the show right before we recorded anyway, or started recording anyway, that you've never seen Enterprise before? This is new. This one's new for you.
Yeah, so had we not got into this in the first place, I never would have got into this, just like Voyager and right. Deep Space Nine. So
you're welcome.
What can I say except you're welcome?
Yeah, I appreciate that, you know, so much, Thomas. And, you know, just as far as Enterprise, like, in a nutshell, like, the only thing that I despised about the whole show was that it ended with These Are the Voyages, and I was just like, come on, guys.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we will... I think we will have a hearty conversation about These Are the Voyages. Oh, sure. It is a very controversial episode within the series, and a lot of people like to think that the show just ended at the previous final arc, which is the Terra Nova, I believe, arc, which is pretty good. We didn't watch it for this, but we can dabble in it a little bit.
Sure.
For the Kelvin timeline, just so that we can get it out of the way. Well, Amber, what's your opinion on the J.J. Abrams Star Trek movies? Now that you've kind of, especially with the original series, you have kind of an understanding of what this show is like. Looking at the Kelvin timeline, what are your early thoughts on that, comparatively speaking?
You know, because I had not seen like previous Star Trek series,
mm-hmm.
I thought the Kelvin timeline was the shit, but I realized it is shit.
It stinks. It stinks. It's thanks.
Like, okay. It's nowhere near as good as, you know, like Voyager, Next Generation, mm-hmm. Deep Space, yada,
so
yada.
It's not even in your top, so far, top three.
It's not. Here.
Okay.
Because it's very flashy.
Yeah.
Like, you know, literally, how we, it is, you know, talked a little bit about city, it. Everybody. But it's very flashy. And there's really no, like you said, it doesn't make any sense. And it just doesn't have that same vibe.
Yeah.
As the other series.
Yeah. Walter, what about you? What are your opinions on the Kelvin timeline movies?
The first two are okay. The last one, I was like, what is going on? And yeah. The one thing I did like, because I haven't seen the original Star Trek, so I think I'm actually going to go back now that I know about mm-hmm. Khan. More so like the Augment arc, which we're going to get into here in a bit. And yeah. They're like references to Khan over and over and over again. So
I highly suggest if you're just picking episodes, go watch Space Seed and then go watch Star Trek II, The Wrath of Khan. You don't need to watch Star Trek I to understand Star Trek II. But anyway, yeah, Khan is definitely it's a good one. So are you kind of in the same, are you in like a preemptive similar boat to Amber then here? Like you're like, I think I like the original series better than these Kelvin timeline movies, or where are you sitting on these?
They just don't seem real. Like they seem like they just did fan service, like,
right,
for three movies, you know, as far as character growth, like there isn't any. You know, I think like my favorite character was Khan in the second movie because like he was just a badass in the first one. I was right. Like, okay, why are we here again?
Well, I think if you like Benedict Cumberbatch's Khan, then you'll definitely like Ricardo Montalban's Khan for sure. So let's dive into Enterprise here. So to frame this series, it is like The Right Stuff meets Star Trek, and then it kind of jumps on the prequel bandwagon that we are just beating to death in the early 2000s. I mean, you have Star Wars prequels, you have Star Trek prequel now. And unlike its, you know, brother-sister shows, Star Trek Enterprise only ran for 4 seasons, unlike the more or less traditional 7 to 9 seasons, like, with the exception of TOS. You know, the Next Gen series ran for a long, like almost a decade in a lot of cases. This show goes on for 4 seasons and it's just like, oh, we're done. Personally, it's gotta be one of, if not my favorite one of these, just cause it's so, like, when we started watching it, I was like, this is so cool. Like, it's just so cool to see, like, the early days of Starfleet figuring out shit. And, like, all the aliens are like, what the fuck's a human?
It doesn't even have, like, the original theme song.
Oh, boy. Well, you know, since you mentioned it. I thought it was going to be a long road, but our time is finally here. What are your guys' opinions?
I loved it. I hated it at first, but the more I watched the show, the more I loved it.
I know. It was the same, because every time you hear it, it's just like, oh, like, it made me cringe at the beginning, but then when you hear it, you're like, I know what this is. This is Star Trek Enterprise. Like, there's another episode coming on.
I just love how Netflix waits for it to be like, it's been
it's
a long
so
road.
It's just so American. Like, it's just...
It is. It's the American Star Trek.
It's been a long road. America! Fuck yeah!
It exactly. Is. It's so, like, I could see this being played in a church. And, like, I would be, like, silently laughing to myself while everyone else is just singing along, like, it's some gospel tune. Like, it's so... I have a very love-hate relationship with this song. Like, it's catchy as shit. But it's also, it's hard because it's like you watch, you know, the original series and then especially like Next Generation and Deep Space Nine and Voyager, and you have these like, you know, big orchestral, amazing space things, and then it's just like, hi, I'm here to sing about the Enterprise anyway.
Yeah, and they got like space shuttles and like, you know, just like ships old, and old ass tech. Meanwhile, like all the other ones have like this crazy tech.
Yeah, right? Isn't there like airplanes or something?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's great. Like it's cool because it's like, hey, look, this is sort of that next first step into the next thing. And like, I get it. But since we're there, what are you guys' opinions about the weird change around season 3 to the theme song where it suddenly takes that upbeat and poppy sound to it?
I mean, considering that like the time-space continuum itself was unraveling, it was needed, right? Like, I was depressed. I was like, what's going to happen here? I needed a little pep in my step. And season 4 certainly called for it as well.
Oh, I actually thought it was kind of funny that they did that as a joke.
I don't think they did it as a joke, but it definitely... It's one of those things
I don't know, maybe they were just trying to keep up with the times, but I was just like, ah, okay, we're doing remixes now.
It's been a long road, DJ Khaled, from there to here.
Yeah, it's one of those things where I'm just like, it hits me like a ton of bricks. I will never forget the first time I heard it. I just remember, like, I walked in my bathroom, I'm letting it play, and then all of a sudden, it's like, it's been a long road, getting from there to here. And I'm like, what the fuck? Walked out, because I legit thought the wrong thing was coming on Netflix. I was like, oh, fuck, I ran out of Star Trek episodes. And I like walk out, and I'm like, what the hell? And it's exactly the same, but like with this weird upbeat guitar and everything. I didn't like it. I like the original one. If I have to pick one, I like the original one. But yeah, the theme song is it's got its charm, I guess.
I think it fits, right, for what was going on, you know, with the whole, like,
for sure,
we're trying to get to Warp 5.
And it's such a cool, like, I love that. Like, I love that the show, it's like, oh, man, it's going to take us so long to get to Risa. And I'm like, boy, by TNG, we're just like, oh, I'm going to pop over to Risa for a few hours, and I'll be back in a couple minutes. Let me know. And it's like, bloop, bloop, done. But yeah, no, it's cool. I also just love the aesthetic. Let's talk... I keep wanting to jump into the episodes, but honestly, like, I just want to talk about stuff in Enterprise for a minute. Like, what do you guys think of the ship itself, the Enterprise NX-01? Amber, what are your thoughts on this, like, first Enterprise ship compared to, especially, like, TNG and then, you know, like, the original series and stuff?
Yeah, it's janky. It's, like, Star Wars janky, because you look at those ships and you're just like, it's just hunks of metal fused together, and then right. It flies. And I was just kind of like, yeah, like compared to like the Enterprise, like from the original series and like even Voyager,
right.
I was just like, yeah, that's not a nice looking ship at all, but it's a ship.
Walter, so your thoughts on the NX-01 Enterprise, like what are your thoughts seeing this thing?
So for me, you know, looking at like the space gateway, you know, where they got like the weird, you know, spider looking thing fixing up right. The ship for the first time, and right. They're, you know, trying to pick the right captain, and they're trying to get Trip or whoever's going to be in charge of doing all of the things to like make the ship run. You know, for me, looking at it and seeing it, it's like the closest thing that they have to like tech that's relatable to like us in right. The real world, right? So I think it bridges a lot of gaps, excluding the whole like magic woo-woo warp drive as far as like, you know, because a lot of their shieldings and stuff like that is just like, oh, well, we have like a tight whatever plating, and when it's gone, yeah. Baby. You know? Yeah,
they're just like, we can polarize the whole plating. That's it.
Yeah, yeah,
we
yeah.
Don't have a force field. We just have the plating reflect light a little
like,
bit better.
And even like, they don't have phasers or anything like that.
Not until a little bit later, but yeah, they don't. Yeah. They start out with, we have missiles, and even those are kind of janky
right.
As fuck in the beginning.
And, like, and they're, you know, and the guys, you know, you see Archer in the first episode, and they're like, Captain Archer, should we put weapon systems on this craft? And he's like, no, we're an exploration craft, you know. Right. And then in the end of the, you know, season 4, he goes back home and like Challenger's getting built, and he's like, you're gonna need all the weapons, every last one. You know,
but it's true, right? Because it's like, I love how in the beginning, so, you know, this is actually a great segue into it, right, is you start out in Broken Bow, opens up on a Klingon running through a cornfield being chased by these two creepy looking lizard men almost, who can like squeeze under doors and shit, and he blows them away, and you know, then he gets shot by a farmer. It's very like Dragon Ball Z-esque if, you know, Raditz actually got shot and took damage. Like, it's very just like, what the hell are you? And he's like, oh, rock, 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 boom, blows him away. And I love, to Walter's point, I love that the tech, that's what I love about it. So, like, my thoughts on the NX-01 real quick are just, like, it is such a fun ship to look at because it's small and it feels small, and they, like, do a good job with that.
I know, they only have 40 people on there versus like 200.
Right, but it's like, it's also the fact that like it feels like an actual spaceship.
Yeah, it feels like a submarine almost.
Right, right? You look at the room. It feels like a ship.
But
right?
It's just so like, even like for the doors and shit.
Do you have to push the button?
Right, and speaking of pushing the button, like what's the deal with like the flip phone? Like, beam me up, Scotty. Like, why isn't it just like, I don't know. For me, that's the one thing that kind of broke.
Why isn't it like a walkie-talkie?
Yeah,
right?
Or crazy idea, guys. Why don't we put it on our suits so that when we get into battle, like in every freaking episode, and mysteriously it gets bopped by a laser right. beam, and then it's like, oh, how do we get home now? I have no idea.
Well, I think that that's because in the original series, that's what they're flipping open, right? So I think it's supposed to be more a callback to that. But, you know, if you do watch something like Voyager or TNG or any of them, they do put it on their, like, they put it on their, like, lapel, and then it's instead of their, you know, pin getting blown away, they're just like, oh, they're blocking communications. Right. Damn it. It's like, oh, God, well, the same problem, just different shit. Like,
right. That's
and we'll
fair.
Find a way to make it not work. But, I mean, I like it because it's just like a ship. Like, it's like, it to me is very much like, if we built a large spacecraft that has like a crew in this sense of the Enterprise, like it would look like the NX-01.
Yeah, it's like Space Force.
Right, but it would look like it way before like it looks like fucking Enterprise D, where right. it's like carpeted and shit. Like, what the fuck is that? Like,
right.
Which we didn't, I don't feel like we talked enough about that on the last episode, but I mean, just like the fact that there's carpet everywhere in kind of the Next Generation almost just takes you out of it. Like, it bothers me a lot because it's like, that is disgusting. It's disgusting.
Wait, and you don't think like, they have like super eco-friendly carpet in the future, Thomas?
Oh, dude, I don't mean like the eco-friendliness and stuff like that. I mean like it's just nasty. You got people who are
but
getting like
they
goop
might
everywhere.
Have like futuristic vacuums that could just get every yeah. particle
you know what you don't
ground.
Need to carry around futuristic vacuums with? Just fucking metal.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, let it just be fucking
but
metal.
But it's softer on your feet.
Listen, you're wearing boots. Jean-Luc could not walk around on metal, okay? He needed
exactly.
The
he's got
he's
to
a
have
classy
carpet.
Man.
He needs the red carpet.
Yeah.
Both
well,
in the show and out of the show.
Or that nasty pink carpet they got everywhere anyway. Maybe it was red and it's just the Enterprise D's kind of getting on in years. just... Mr. Data, please change the carpet. It's getting to be disgusting and dingy.
Sir, by my calculations, we can't afford to change the carpets.
Damn it, Data. I don't care what we can and can't afford. Do it. Or you're off. Or I'll take you apart and shut you off and put you back in that little box I found you. But yeah, Enterprise, I think, is just such a cool ship. And they do a really good job set-wise by making it feel smaller than the other ships. And also, like, everybody who's doing in the show, the actors are doing a good job. Like, this is a more or less cramped space, kind of like a submarine, like, Walter
yeah,
out.
And not to mention like the B characters like that you start with like kind of grow throughout the series, and so like when Trip like is helping Challenger, like his secondhand man is the guy that's like, you know, there, and in Enterprise it was like, or any of the other ones, it was like you got your primary dude, and then like that's right. it, some rando that's gonna be there for that one episode, and they're gonna disappear.
Right. Even people like Lieutenant Barclay are like there when they need him to be there, and then for the rest of the time it's like, what's Barclay doing? Who? Oh yeah, I don't know, maybe he's some other part of the ship we never ever go to, he just stays over there, you know. Whereas in Enterprise you even go so far as to see like the same extras over and over and over, which is kind of neat. But yes, so first episode of Star Trek Enterprise, Broken Bow, this Klingon gets shot and he doesn't die because Klingons arguably can't half the time. Humans have never seen a Klingon before, but Vulcans are aware of what Klingons are, and this is where we get kind of introduced to what had to be one of my favorite parts of this series, and that is like the human and Vulcan dynamic. So like the last time chronologically we leave these guys off, the Vulcans just landed, shook Cochrane's hand, had a drink with him, and we just go back to the TNG future and everything's hunky-dory. Enterprise is like, the Vulcans are pieces of shit who are holding us back from our true potential as people, and like, we hate them. Like, they're nothing more than like annoying parents, basically.
He's jealous. He's holding me back.
I just loved that out the gate, how the humans are like, oh no, we don't like the Vulcans very much. Because it's so much before that, it's like, the Vulcans are all smart and they're cool and they're logical and whatever. But in this, they're like, nope, we're going to take Kang back to Kronos ourselves. You guys chill here. And they're like, what happened on our fucking planet? And we got this nifty new ship. So how about you fuck the hell off? No,
they wanted to kill him, didn't they?
Well, they wanted to bring his body back. They wanted to bring his body back.
They just wanted to let him die.
Right. Because for those of you who are still listening to this month of episodes and don't understand Star Trek, or don't know what you're doing here, but Klingons have this whole honor system.
Klingons are like Saiyans.
Yeah, they're like Vikings, right? Like, they're like,
oh, yeah.
Any kind of warrior, insert warrior archetype here. And it's just like, they want to die with honor. So if they die in battle, they die with honor. Yeah. Getting shot in the chest.
They're like samurais.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
And it's just like, you get shot, you're in battle, and you die. That's how you want to die. You, to the point where you don't want to be saved. You need to be allowed to die, because to come back from that is kind of a waste. And of course, there's a way they get around that in this episode to where it doesn't count. But Archer's like, he's not dead. And this is where you get introduced to his Dr. Phlox, who I just fucking love. I love Dr.
He's
Phlox.
He's the best doctor.
He's... I'm
He's the best doctor. Like
He's the best doctor.
I love Doctor from Voyager, and then I met Phlox.
Yeah. Exactly.
Please state the nature of the medical emergency.
20 Borg about to break through that door. We need time to get out of here. Create a diversion.
This isn't part of my program. I'm a doctor, not a doorstop.
Optimism, Captain.
EMH Doctor is just like a couple steps beneath Dr. Phlox to me. Like, EMH Doctor is great, but Phlox is a whole new level. I mean, I just love how it's like, he has all his animals and shit.
Right. He's like, oh, they don't can't synthesize things yet. So he's like, I have an animal that can do that. You know, like, it's so cool.
It is so cool. That's one of the things I like about the show, is because, like, they can and can't do some of the shit we see later. Mm-hmm. And it does kind of make you realize that a lot of this shit, especially in, like, TNG and stuff, it's kind of like, oh, we have a machine that just makes that appear out of thin air. Like, whatever, fuck it, man. You want food, we got this. It's like, oh, well, we actually can do kind of that, but we have a chef who makes this stuff because we can't, like, synthesize pre-cooked like food necessarily. And I'm like, that's cool. Like, that's cool, and that's what we'd be doing, right? Like, we would, I feel like as humans, we would not be sitting around like, well, I can't synthesize a steak out of garbage, so I guess no space for us, guys, fuck it, we're just gonna hang out here and wait for later when we figure that technology out. But yep, so that's how this mission starts. Archer gets Kang on his ship, and off they go to go to Kronos to deliver him back to his people. Much to the Vulcan's chagrin, and this is where you get introduced to T'Pol, his science officer, which is such a confusing relationship. It's like, she's supposed to be like a Vulcan observer on his ship.
She's a babysitter.
Right. But she then she is. Actually, like, has
he's
like a
always
role.
Like, take the helm or whatever. And right. She's like, okay.
Which is weird. That's where it's weird to me, right? It's like, she's his first officer. But, like, she's not... It's the way she phrases her role is, like, she's just supposed to be there to make sure they get there okay. And I'm like, this seems kind of weird. Like, I don't feel like that's how that would work properly. But
and as first officer, she has, like, rights.
Right, like, she has command over a lot of people. And I'm like, this seems like to go against the grain.
Like, there's that one point
here.
Where I think if he had died, like, she would have been able to take command and actually, like, change their...
Right.
Yeah.
So, like, later in this episode, they're trying to figure out what the hell happened to Kang. Like, who are these other guys he was getting chased by or whatever? And they go to, like, Rigel 10, where they, like, you know, get introduced to alien species for the first time. You're kind of seeing humans walk around on another planet for the first time and all this other stuff. And during all of this, they meet and learn about the Suluban, who are, like, the evil... antagonists, I guess, of season one-ish, and they're like part of this thing called the Temporal Cold War, which, like, let's take a beat here. Walter, what is your opinion on the Temporal Cold War shit in the show?
So, I mean, another Star Trek that decided they were going to take a crack at time travel, you know, it's like, right. What a surprise. But overall, like, I mean, other than the whole fact that Archer just becomes a god in the end, I thought it was pretty well executed. It was a different twist, right? Like,
right.
I'm a sucker for, like, oh man, the Nazis won World War II, and now the Americans have to come back and win again. It's like, hell right. yeah, brother. Like, that's what I'm all about. But right. it was executed pretty well, you know. I thought it was weird that they had a gigantic Death Star, you know, that they were like, I was like, you couldn't have come up with something a little more creative than a Death Star. But other than that, was a little, you know, I can give them that. And then there's the whole, like, they go back into World War II and, like, the like, leader of the Cold War is, like, building a time travel device. And I'm just like, buddy, you've been here for, like, 10 years and you built all of this out of nothing, out of, like, a monkey sieve. Okay.
Yeah, the beginning of season 4 after the Zindi War is they get thrown back to World War II where there are other time people back there fucking around helping the Nazis out, and they give like an alien a Nazi temporal uniform and everything.
Agents.
Yeah, temporal agents
that are owned by different factions.
Yeah, no, I feel like the temporal Cold War is something that's it's good and bad. Like, it's not well explained enough to where it works, but it's overly explained enough to where it doesn't work, I guess, if that makes sense. Like, it works because they're trying to, like, not explain it too much so they can just do whatever the fuck they want with it. Mm-hmm. But then they're like, oh yeah, we described a little too much, so now this doesn't make any sense. Like, they're like, oh, well, it's a Cold War, but that's fine. And it's like, yeah, they can't go back in time, but we can go back in time. And I'm like, well, that's not a Cold War then. A Cold War is fought between two people who have mutually assured destruction and are on the same level. If you can go back in time and fuck around, and they can't go back in time and fuck around, they could just talk to people in the past, you win the Cold War. It's over. Like, you just go back, fuck with their shit, and it's done.
Right.
They can't do anything about it.
And I don't think they address, like, the whole time paradox thing very well in this one, because it's like...
Totally not.
It's like, oh no, the future changes if things change in the past. And it's like, okay, but like, what about the future that's still going in the future? Like, isn't that just a paradox? You're like, right,
yeah, there's a later episode where they go back to, like, but there's like the time agent that's on their ship, and he tells them straight up, I'm a time agent.
Doc! Okay, relax, Doc. It's Martin.
Oh, it can't be. I sent you back to the future.
Yeah. Oh, I know you did send me back to the future, but I'm back. I'm back from the future.
Great Scott.
And then the Suliban kills him, and then he actually, like, isn't dead, or it's a different one of him from a different timeline, or they fixed it or some bullshit.
It got Doctor Who real quick.
It got crazy, because he comes back at the season finale,
right.
And he's just like, sup, fam, Archer, come with me to the future. I'm going to show you how awesome this shit. What? And everything's, like, destroyed. Like, there's no Federation, everything's decimated, and he's, like, for some reason wearing this, like, weird black jumpsuit thing for, like, no reason.
Right.
And Archer's like, this looks pretty shitty, bro. Why are we here? I thought you said this was going to be great. And he's just like, this is wrong. Oh, no. And we can't go back to the past. So, like, we got to build a time machine from this junk or something like that to figure out what's wrong. And they're, like, reading books that just they're lucky enough to find in the rubble that, like, tell them where everything went wrong and, like, all this shit. And it's just the temporal Cold War is, like, it's weird. It's like this low-key season arc I'm not a big fan of.
Could have done without it. The show was fine without it.
It totally was. Without it. Because you forget it, right? Like, when you watch these episodes, like, you watch the Andorian Incident, for example, which, you know, is a great episode. I think it's a cool episode because you meet Shran, which is a shame Cody wasn't able to get on this call because I know how much he likes that character. But, you know, you meet the Andorians and, like, you get their dynamic with the Vulcans, and you actually see the Vulcans be a bad guy. Like, they are secretly spying on the Andorians, and the whole episode, they're like, this is crazy. The Vulcans wouldn't do... What the fuck is this? And they find the secret spy facility in their monastery.
Yeah. But, I mean, the Vulcans have a really interesting dynamic. Just to spin off that for a second. Like, the humans, when they're like, hey, guys. Like, episode 1, they're like, we hate the Vulcans. And then, like, later on in season 3, when you go to, like, T'Pol's wedding, or season 4, whenever this is, and you find out that, like, there's like this like secret faction inside of the Vulcans, mm-hmm. like that have the truth from like 10,000 years ago, and the current,
yep.
You know, Vulcan government is like hiding it from the people. And I'm like, huh, this sounds reminiscent of real life. And then, right. You know, so they're like trying to find the truth. And then like you find out that the High Council is like, well, we don't want the humans to do this because they did it in 100 years. And if they could do this in 100 years and it took us 10,000 years to do it, imagine what they could do in 100 more years. And they're, like, terrified of what the humans can do because they remember how quickly they did it and how quickly they got destroyed and then how long it took for them to, like, seize power from, like, the good people.
Right. So it's wild. Yeah, so in season four, there's this whole arc that takes place on Vulcan, which, like, I think this is my favorite thing about season four as a whole is that it just takes mini arcs. The whole thing is, like, 2 to 4 episode arcs of just shit happening. And I think that it is a damn shame the show ended when it did, because it nailed its formula with that season where it's like, we're all just doing the shit, but it's like, we're gonna take 4 or 5 episodes to do it and we'll move on to the next thing. It's great. But yeah, there's a whole arc on Vulcan where, so you have Spock, right? And the way Spock Vulcans is different from the way T'Pol Vulcans.
Yeah.
Like, Spock's doing mind melds and shit when they're like, you can't do that because that's like
taboo.
Terrible. Yeah, it's a taboo thing, right? They find out, it's kind of like, I guess the equivalent would be like if Christianity was functioning now and then you found like Jesus's notes for a future Bible or some shit.
Yeah, but not only Jesus's notes. Jesus was in a Vulcan's mind somewhere in a cave. Right. Right?
So like Jesus is still alive in some form.
Yeah.
And he has his notes from like, he's like, man, if this becomes a religion, I know exactly what I want to write down. And then like, there's a group of people that are like protecting him, while at the same time like modern Christianity is all in on it and they're like, no, if we let Jesus come out, we lose control over all this shit. And that's kind of what ends up happening at the end, is like they let the sort of Vulcan savior with his notes about the religion shit, or the
who also
society,
decides like, because he gets struck by lightning, to like embody himself in Jonathan Archer. And you're like, right. Wow, another situation where the hero is the hero again. Like,
right.
Couldn't have been T'Pol, who was literally right next to him when this happened.
Yeah, it's a little weird. And in defense of doing that, it is a callback, I think, to Star Trek III, Search for Spock, because something similar happens to McCoy, which like, I liked that dynamic in that movie better than what you're describing, because like if Kirk had it happen to him, it'd be like, oh my god, okay, so we have to watch Shatner god do complex. A Spock impression, okay, cool, wow, oh boy. Whereas it's funnier in the context of the movie. But yeah, so like that's kind of what happens, and it's because of that occurrence that you get sort of the Spock Vulcan style that you see later on in the TOS and then off into TNG and whatever.
Live long and prosper.
But yeah, in the Andorian incident, and just to, I guess, wrap up Broken Bow, because I keep forgetting to, is they get Kang. Kang turns out he has some secret message in his DNA given to him by the good people in the future. They go and they raid the Suluban hideout. They get Kang back, and Archer has a freaky time fight with the head Suluban guy. And
so weird.
It is weird. The whole thing in the room where everything's like an after image of itself.
Yeah, that was weird.
Weird, and it went on for way too fucking long. Like, when it's like, I shoot the phaser and you see it go, but it didn't get to you yet. I'm like, okay, Suluban man,
but you're in this room. That's so easy. You have to determine where he's going to be, right? That was the whole point.
And right.
Any person could do that.
But it's like, my problem is like, if Archer did that to the Suluban guy, it'd be fine because he's never been in the room. He's like, what the fuck's going on?
Yeah.
But Suluban guy is going in there all the fucking time. And he just goes like, damn it, he moved out of the way.
Oh,
curses.
God.
Like, what the fuck is this? Like, what, dude, come on.
Right.
Curse your sudden but inevitable betrayal. Mine is an evil laugh. Now die. Oh, no, God.
But they get Kang out. They take him back to Kronos. And, you know, he goes before the Klingon High Council or whatever. And they check his DNA and they find the message, which I don't, Walter, correct me if I'm wrong, I don't think they ever say what the fuck's in the message.
No,
they
just later, he just gets there, they take his blood, and they're like, oh, you have saved us, Jonathan Archer. Thank you so much.
Fuck you, but thanks, but fuck you.
Right. And then they show like the DNA thing, which I was like, oh, this is badass, because like they had questioned that poor guy for like months, and he was like, I know nothing.
Oh. Right. He's like, I don't know anything. And they're like, I thought you gave him the truth serum. It's like, I did. And he's like, I don't know anything.
Right. Right.
goes from there. And then later they do mention, like, it turns out, like, oh, he had some business in the message had something to do with the Klingons not doing something because it'll destroy the Klingon Empire or some shit like that. It's like, if that happens, then the future bad guys, some shit occurs. I don't fucking know. But yeah, so that's how Broken Bow kind of ends. I do have one gripe with Broken Bow. So, Walter, do you watch Netflix with subtitles on, or are you like a strictly no subtitles?
It just depends. Like, I watched a lot of these episodes with subtitles on.
Okay, did you watch this particular pilot episode with subtitles on?
Not enough for me to be like, oh man, these subtitles really piss me off. Like, I didn't pay attention.
So, I got irritated. Now, I've seen these before, so it's like, you know, me watching it's a rewatch. I get you guys aren't watching. You're watching it for the first time. You're not paying attention to nitpicky shit like I am. But like, in the very first scene where we meet Hoshi, the like comm officer, she's teaching a class in like Brazil or some shit, right?
Right.
The subtitles say speaking Klingon, and she's like teaching them Klingon, assumedly, right? Archer goes and he's like plays a clip that the Vulcans gave him of Klingon, and she's like, what the fuck is that?
Right.
And he's like, oh, they gave us a sample of their database. And I'm like, you were just speaking this language 5 fucking minutes ago. Like, what is
this? But there's 100 different dialects.
I don't give a shit. I think it's either she really was speaking Klingon and they just wrote it in the script for her to say it.
Yeah.
And then Netflix was like, oh, that's Klingon. So, like, put it in as Klingon. And,
even
like,
though
she
it
didn't
probably
know.
Wasn't Klingon.
Well, even if it, I wouldn't be surprised if it was. And then we were like, oh, shit, we should have made her just say gleep-glop noises or something like that. Fuck, this is stupid, and now it doesn't make any sense. You know, but that's my, like, one gripe with
now
it.
That you mention it, I remember that, and I was like, oh, this is strange. And, I just don't understand how you can teach a class. Like, it seems like real college, where people are like, I don't know what this is, but I'm going to pretend like I do, and you're going to pay me for it.
And she's just, like, making noises, and she's like, and they're like, and she's like, good. I'm like, no, that was bad, Hoshi. That was actually very bad. Like,
that makes no sense whatsoever.
Right?
I have no idea what you're talking about.
But yeah, so, I mean, that's kind of Broken Bow, and I thought it was kind of cool to be like, let's just fuck around with the Klingons in the first episode. I mean, like, you do that with Discovery, but it's a little different when you get to Discovery, and this one did it first, so fuck y'all. But, yeah, Broken Bow was I think it was a solid pilot. What do you guys think? Like, Amber, what did you think of the pilot of this episode? If you saw it back in 2004 or whenever this came out, are you like, I'm intrigued, let's see some more of this?
Yeah, it's better than most pilots. Mm. Or at least the ones we've seen so far.
Yeah.
Some of the ones we've seen have been like, okay, like they're there.
Mm-hmm.
But this one was like, it actually kind of dove into like everything that's, you know, basically been going on at this point. They're ready to go into space with like their new ship,
right,
and like explore or whatever. So, and then also getting to know like, you know, the Vulcans and then like the Klingons.
Right.
So like expanding their knowledge of like different aliens, because at this point they don't have like any knowledge, right?
Right.
So like they know they exist, but they've never like met one.
Right.
So.
What about you, Walter? What did you think of the pilot of this one?
Yeah, I mean, it was nice to have, like, an actual story instead of some weird, like, woo-woo, like a magic storm carries us off into deep space, or, like, we gotta save the gigantic jellyfish people, or, like, I got touched by a god, and now I'm a prophet. Like, it was an actual, like...
Yeah, or just one where it's just, like, does not even have, like, the characters.
Oh,
like,
in
the first one, yeah.
Like, the cage?
Yep.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, well, you also watched, in TOS, you watched the one where Kirk's best friend becomes God, right?
Yeah, that one was crazy.
Well, imagine that is your pilot. That was, from what I read online, that's the pilot.
Yeah.
Original pilot, anyway.
Yeah, but that makes more sense. Like, well,
what's
the one that I saw with Kirk,
gods?
Because it was, like, not the first, like, you know, episode to come out. So it came on, it was later on.
Yeah.
But that would be kind of crazy to have as a first episode.
Yeah.
I guess if it's intriguing enough. But.
Yeah. No, I like this. I gotta agree with with Walter on this one too, is it's just, you're not dealing with this, okay, let's catalyze everything. Mm-hmm. It's just like, oh, hey, you know, this is a plot and we're going to do this thing. And the whole catalyst is just getting a reason for the ship to fucking leave.
Yeah. And I also like the, how it's like, oh, let's get like the gang together.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you have T'Pol and then we have,
like the Hoshi, translator. Yeah.
Yeah. Hoshi. Like he goes and gets Hoshi. He's like, I need you. Like nobody mm-hmm. else can do this. And then he's got Trip, kind of like his, you know, like kind of like his yeah. son, I guess.
Cause he's like his best a father friend. Figure to him.
Yeah.
Listen, yeah. I love Trip. So, he's my Trip's favorite great. Character.
Yeah, Yo, Trip is pretty funny.
Trip.
And then you got the doctor, oh. and yeah.
You're right. And
it's
I,
a great
I think,
crew.
I think, Walter, you kind of pointed this out, too, is like everybody gets kind of a nice little background pretty straight up, right? Like they all grow as the show goes on, but they also have like kind of a background, whereas in like, especially like TNG, they're just like, oh, I'm Captain Picard. I don't like children. I have to go pick up my first
I
mate.
Am the
like,
center of the universe right. in this show.
Right. Also, he knows everything. Like, he mysteriously right. knows everything. Like,
yeah.
it doesn't make any sense to me. You know, you look at this one, and it's like, you got Trip, who's like your... The way I see him is he's like, you think about like the old school NASCAR guys that are just right. trying to get a couple mm-hmm. more horsepower out of their engine.
Right.
You know? And like, you got T'Pol, who's like, you know, scientist type. And then you got like, you know, what's it? So Chi-Min, Sato, Hoshi, yeah, Hoshi Sato, and she's like the linguist, right? Like everybody has their specialization, and you, like they need each other.
Right.
Like if one of yeah. them's gone, like nothing ain't gonna
They're
work.
Screwed.
No, and I think it's a great way to point out because even think of like the Next Generation when they're like, Mr. Data, come to my ready room. He's like, yes, Captain. And he gets up, and then like as he's getting up, some other dude is in the process of taking his seat. And
right.
It's just like everyone's so fucking interchangeable in these shows, and I get it. On something like TNG, Enterprise D is like fucking 1,000 people and their kids on this ship. Like, I get it. It's huge. You're going to have a system like that. Whereas in Enterprise, they're like, Travis, you better not fucking leave that seat or we will crash the damn ship because there's nobody else here to fly the ship but you. Or there's no one here to tell us what the aliens are saying, Hoshi, or what have you. Like, if Trip, they do a whole episode about like Trip going into a coma and they're like, if I don't have Trip, we are. Fucked. Like, yeah, we are
that
really
episode
fucked.
Is ridiculous.
Well, let's jump into it real quick, you know? I mean, we don't have to go in the order here. There's nothing gained from it. Yeah, similitude. I really hope I'm pronouncing that word right.
Dang, and after watching Charlie, I was like, similitude is a lot better.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Charlie reminded me... Sorry, side note. But Charlie reminded me of the Charlie from the movie we watched. So, from the original series, there's an episode called Charlie X or something like that. And it kind of reminded me of similitude, but it's just like on a different level. It's right. like crazier. Because this kid, like having...
Becomes God like
exactly.
everyone else in this fucking show.
But he reminds me...
he does. I'm sorry. He does.
Imagine like... Charlie from Hereditary that does the clicking sound, but instead of the clicking down sound, he like
he crosses
his
eyes,
fucking
yeah.
eyes, and he's like it's just so yeah. fucking crazy.
Yeah, Amber's been binge watching the original series ever since we started watching it, so she's just kind of going hard in that.
Yeah, but I see a reoccurring theme here with, you know, oh, kid and like
right the unassuming
type of power
deity
or whatever.
Character.
Yeah.
yeah. No, but similitude is such a... Similitude to me, I don't know about you, Walter, I don't know about you, Amber, but similitude to me hit me like Tuvix fully realized here. Like...
Yeah, it was a better Tuvix. Tuvix was very hard. I'm still mad at Janeway.
But like, similitude makes me feel conflict. Unlike Tuvix, where I'm like, Janeway, you're a fucking murderer. Like, whatever. But in this, they're like... So, as I said up before, Trip is like, ah, fuck, man, I'm in a coma now. Horrible accident. He's fucked. Dr. Phlox's animal menagerie has this little larva thing where if you give it some of the DNA of something, mm-hmm. it will turn into a perfect clone of that thing in accelerated time. The problem is this has been kind of outlawed by the people of the planet this thing's from because it's sort of like this becomes a sentient creature. And
yeah, and there's not a lot of like studies on it either.
Right.
To say like, oh, this will work.
And the whole thing is the thing only lives like 5 days. Once you do this, the thing only lives like 5 days.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of walking that, is this humane or not? And just as like the broader setup, this occurs in season 3, which is the first and only kind of really constant season arc of the Zindi War, which is this species called the Zindi kind of sends their weird little probe Death Star to Earth, and it just like lasers Florida up the middle and kills like millions of people, including Trip's, some of Trip's family. I think his sister dies in the incident.
We all know Trip's from Florida. Like, let's be honest.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. 100%. I think it's almost funny to me that that's what they chose. Like, this character with that good old country accent. It's like, he's not from Georgia. He's not from Alabama. He's from good old Florida. Good old Miami.
Yeah. Of all the places, from Miami. The rest of them are from the Midwest.
Yeah, I just like that Miami becomes Southern. Like in that timeline, it's not Hispanic at all. It's just like, yeah, and we populated the Deep South. Like,
you know what's good? Catfish. Catfish is my favorite damn food. It's like, sir, I don't believe you're from Miami at all. Right. Maybe Miami, like, global warming really kicks it up a notch. Miami gets flooded, but instead of, like, actually just being decimated, they just move it up north.
Oh,
so, right. Where Florida ends in, you know, 2000, whatever this is further north than where it ends now. So where right. he's from is actually more like...
Like,
you know,
Orlando is now Miami. Yeah,
exactly. They just rename it for consistency's sake.
What happened to Orlando, though?
It just went away.
Got absorbed.
Yeah. Just absorbed by Miami.
Orlando, Miami.
But yeah, so Trip is in a coma, and the only way to save him is to harvest, like, brain matter from this clone. At the same time, the Enterprise is chugging to the Zindi homeworld to fuck up some Zindi shit as, like, a revenge. We're doing 9/11, guys. Just a heads up, we are doing a 9/11 thing. It's the war in Iraq. That's what we're doing with this season. It's kind of beats you over the head with it for, like, 20-some-odd episodes. And Archer's like, if I don't have Trip, we're fucked because we can't go home.
Yeah, because he's, like, the best pilot.
The best engineer and pilot that they have is in a coma. So Archer makes the tough call, which is kind of the theme of season 3, is how many really tough calls can Archer make before we just kind of throw him off the moral deep end here?
He's not Archer anymore.
And he's not Archer anymore. And it seemed like that was the corner they wrote themselves into, and they're like, shit, why don't we just make some of the Zindi good? Because, like, if we keep doing this, Archer's going to be a bad guy. This isn't going to work anymore. But so he creates a clone, and the clone grows up. And we get to watch the clone grow up, and he's like a little kid. And then, little kid Trip is starting to remember things from real Trip's memory, and he's starting to ask questions like, where the fuck's my mom and dad? Why am I here on this ship?
You're a slug, boy.
And yeah, they have to...
We are worms! Worthless worms!
They have to later explain to him, like, you're a clone. You're not Trip. That's why we call you Sim. And he's like, what?
But I'm alive. I'm a real boy, Dad.
Oh, and that's where this gets rough, right? Because we later find out that it's not just a little bit of brain that they got to take out of Sim, the clone.
It's enough to kill him.
It's a lot of brain. We got to take out a lot of brain to put into Trip. And like Amber pointed out, enough to kill him. Well, you know, who cares, right? Sim's only going to live for like a week anyway, so...
But he's living a lifetime. That's the thing.
Well, then they twist the knife on you, and they're like, well, there's actually a procedure that could make him live like a normal life. And it's not really tested, but we could try it. And it's just like, oh no, this is like killing a real person now. This is bad. Like, this is...
Whoa, this is heavy. There's that word again, heavy. Why are things so heavy in the future? Is there a problem with the Earth's gravitational pull? What?
A legitimate quandary we have here, gentlemen. Whatever shall we do? And this is where it pisses me off about Voyager. Is like, in Voyager, she lays it out for Tuvix. All right, you have a choice. Like, I need my guys back. But I can't make you kill yourself. And then it's just like, well, okay, cool. I don't want to die. It's like, wrong answer, bucko. You're going to die now. And it's like, what? Like... What the fuck? And in this, they're like, we can't. Like, our choice is either he lives and we give him this thing, or he dies. And he chooses, and it's great. Like, I really liked it because it had that emotional weight to it, especially at the end. Is he chooses to die so that Trip can live. And they give him a funeral and everything. Shoot him out Spock style in a torpedo. And it's like, Similitude to me is one of the best episodes of this series because it was just like, holy shit, my heart.
But it was better than Tuvix because, again, they didn't just like kill someone.
Right, because my girlfriend's mad.
Exactly. That pissed me off so much. Like, I miss, like, it's just like, girl, get over it. Like, you got someone that's better, in my opinion.
Right, and in this one, they're just like, you have the same person, but different.
Yeah. But there was just no remorse in that one. Whereas this one, like, it was nice to see that he made the decision, you know?
Right.
And he was just like, yeah, but just so you know, like, I'm doing this.
But you do get the dark... the Dark Archer bit, where he's like, you're just gonna make me, you're just gonna go in there and drag me down and kill me, aren't you? He's like, I will if I fucking have to, dude. And he like just straight lays it out, as opposed to this, oh, wrong answer, bud, I'm gonna kill you anyway.
And there was
like,
that one point he was going to, I guess, fly away or whatever.
Yeah, but then he was gonna
run.
He was
just like, I don't know where I would go. Like, and just realizing that he's a slug.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like he's not... He has the memories of another person, but that's not him.
But then we also get into some sketchy Phlox shit, too. And it's not the only time we see Phlox do some questionable things, where he's like, why didn't you tell me that this was a thing, Phlox? And he's like, well, it hasn't been tested, and I just felt like it wasn't important at the time. And I'm just like, dude.
About to get your medical license taken.
And that will do it for part one of our Star Trek, The Failed Restart era. As always, check us out wherever you get your podcasts. You can also check out our website at swhn19.com. We're on Facebook at So What Happens Next, Instagram at So What Happens, and Twitter at So What Happens N1. Feel free to reach out. We'd love to hear what you guys think of these episodes, and what are your thoughts on Star Trek? Favorite episodes, favorite captains, you name it. But until next week, as we round up part two of the failed reboot era of Star Trek, I am one of your hosts, Thomas.
I'm Amber.
And I'm Walter.
And this is So What Happens Next.